You think you know about relationships, but you're wrong. Listen, there's no magic bullet. I'm teaching life skills.
When you're sick, you need medicine. It don't always taste good.
Nah.
But it'll get you better.
You
need this medicine.
Yeah.
It ain't gonna always taste good. But this is what you need. Men and women, bottom line, we need to have the conversation. Your partner wants to give up control, but only if you know how to drive. This is about being the best you could ever be. Whoever you are, I don't care if you're a man, a woman, LGBTQ, space aliens. I'll save anybody. I don't care. I'll teach a hedgehog how to have a threesome.
What do you mean by that?
Look, you don't have to listen to me, but you're wrong.
Listen, I know I'm great. And I know you're thinking, Dante, there's no way I could be like you. But you could be me, you know why?
Because you know who I was? Before I was me, I was you. You.
Man score 202.
Better hear what I've got to say because you won't get it again.
I'm not an alpha male. I'm not a beta male either. I'm just a better man. Better man.
Well, put your happiness first, because if you don't, they won't.
What's up, Square Pimper Gabe? GYBB, get your balls back. WWDD, what would Dante do? The sexual revolution is being podcasted, and I am excited. What's going on, Hal? You ready to rock and roll?
Oh, man, I'm doing great. Other than having a tough time keeping these gators down, that's the only problem.
It is difficult. Pimping ain't easy. It gets better with practice, though. I'm excited about the show. We got a special guest in the building. We're going to get right to it. L.A.? I came from L.A.?
I'm not from L.A. I live in L.A. I born in Brooklyn, grew up in Florida, live in L.A.
Oh, word. Okay. Give it up for Akeem Woods, y'all. Give it up for him. Yeah.
Yay.
Thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate this. Funny dude. I watched you rock. Funny dude.
That,
how long you been rocking?
10 years. It'll be 11 in September.
Okay. Any good advice, 10-year advice that you could give somebody?
No, I mean, just be authentic and be yourself and never give up and all that bullshit.
That is the podcast in general. It's good. What's going on? So originally from Brooklyn. Where in Brooklyn?
I was born in Bed-Stuy, but I don't claim Brooklyn. So I literally lived there till I was like 4. I'm from Brooklyn. I'm like, no, I was there until I was 4, and then we moved to Florida. All
right,
yeah, but
cool.
Those were the hard years, man.
Those 4 years were wild.
What year was that when you were, like, how old were you? When
the 90s. I was born in 1990.
Yeah, so you still got a little hood in you. That 90s in Brooklyn and Bed-Stuy was fire. You could get a pension for 4 years in Brooklyn, you know?
From 90 to 94, I was in Brooklyn.
I've seen a lot of rusty 38s with electrical tape on the handle in the 90s. So it was a lot of that going down.
The electrical tape, was it for Prince or because it was wearing down?
No, because it was an old rusty shitty gun that had bodies on it. And they would just tape it to keep the handle on it, basically, you know.
So keep it from falling apart?
Yeah, like what you got, you know, like when you get a shitty car, how the steering wheel starts to fall apart and you wrap it in it. Yeah, it was really. We lost our guest. Holy shit, he disappeared.
I just closed the window real quick because I realized it was loud.
Yeah, I'm fucking chilling. I got a chance to see Akeem. Akeem's a funny dude. Really, please check him out. Funny shit. How's it going in the city? How long you been in the city?
Are you back now? Oh no. I'm on the road a lot. I was on the road. I toured Godfrey a lot.
Okay.
So after New York, we did Pittsburgh, and then now I'm back in LA, but I'll be back in New York on Friday.
Okay.
So I'll be there for a week until the 23rd, and then I fly to Seattle.
Dope. That's dope. And you, how often you do the road? How many weeks of the year do you do the road?
I'm on the road like 6 months out of the year, almost 7. So a lot.
Open, yeah. Do you headline yourself or you just usually
I headline a lot, I feature a lot. I'd say like 40% of my work is with Godfrey, and then the other 60% is me like on the road headlining clubs and stuff.
Okay, cool, cool. God, you know, Godfrey's my boy. That's my dude. I mean, you know, I've been doing it 20, man, but you watch that motherfucker. He make you feel like you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, I've been working with him for almost like 4 years now. I've known him for like almost 5 years. I've been working with him for like 3 or 4, and every night is a different hour. It's a different stuff. It's always different.
Yeah, yeah. He has this ability. He has this ability to take really small, insignificant moments and blow them up into huge chunks of pieces and just level the room.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you also see him with the transition, his transition of where he got really put political and stuff like that? Or was he already that when you were, you know?
He might have been already that, because we met like probably 4 years ago. So I think he was already doing all that when I met him.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Cool. It's interesting. I was asking you if you, I know you read the bio of the podcast and whatnot. And so initially, like, this was a really kind of hetero male orientated kind of podcast. And then we've been doing this podcast for about eight years. I'm coming up on nine.
We're on year nine right now.
We're in nine, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, that's dope. Congrats, man.
Yeah, and we've never missed a day, like fucking nine years. Never missed a week. We do one a week. But what's interesting is, you know, my perspective, I initially started, you know, we did a radio show with Patrice called the Black Phillip Show. And this was the later iteration
to that all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you do listen to Black Phillip.
I'm a huge Patrice was one of my favorite comics.
Yeah, yeah. No doubt. Yeah. One of my best friends. Let's talk about that a little bit. The principles that he applied in that. I mean, you did listen to the Black Phillip Show. You know, there's like 13 episodes. Yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah. Have you listened to them over and over again like everybody else?
I've listened to them a lot. I haven't listened to them recently, but I listen to them a lot.
What are some of the things that stand out for you in listening? You know, philosophically, even as a gay male. What was the translation?
I mean, I felt like it wasn't really, he was speaking so much about relationships between men and women that I never really felt like it applied to me, because I'm not sleeping with women, obviously.
Right, right, right.
But, and like, honestly, there's some things that he said, I'm like, I don't agree with this, but like he was so firm in his opinion and he didn't waver on it so much. So I'm like, I respect the fuck out of him
for not
backing off on, even if the opinion is something that I don't agree with at all, which most of the stuff I did agree with. But like, even if I was like, well, that's wild, I'm like, well, shit, you backed it up with so many points and it's so funny. And it's like, well, I guess.
What did you not agree with him on?
I see. The thing is, he had this, he always had this really strong view of, this is my assumption based on.
No, that's what I'm asking you.
Yeah, but he always seemed to have this very, like, the gender roles were really set in stone.
Okay.
And like that dominant women, like women needed a man to be like, women needed to be submissive to a man in order to get escalated to the next level.
Right.
And I've always thought that. I'm like, I don't know if I 100% agree with that. But at the same time, I don't have a dog in that fight, because I'm not trying to have sex with women. So like,
you're like, I can't
see that perspective.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know what's interesting about that is, go ahead, Harry.
Well, the more and more, like, you were starting to talk about the philosophies when the show started.
Yeah.
But the more and more we had different types of guests on the show, whether guests who had different sexual orientation, you know, gay and lesbian and even trans guests on the show.
Gay, lesbian, everything in
between. We discovered that it applied to everybody in a different capacity, that it was more about the dominant and submissive, or really more of who's going to lead at some point.
Yeah.
And it applied to everybody. That's what we found recently anyway.
Yeah, it's a funny thing, because we had started with these kind of, what you're talking about, these really, really strong gender roles. And then
I think the first time we did a show was like 2006. So if you think about the progression that has happened in terms of how we perceive gender roles and the fluidity of gender roles and stuff, but there was like, it's kind of what you say. It's like, there was always all these points, like he would make these points and he would have so much ever, you know, so many points. And it would be funny that you go, well, yeah, I don't know that to be the case, but what I've done in the interim is to kind of see where they fit. So, you know, people will teach their kids, have their kids learn chess as a way to conceptually see strategy and, you know, to think, you know, there's a whole bunch of things that you can learn from philosophically from playing chess. But most kids just learn how to play chess and they don't learn the application of any of those things in real life because it just seems so
disconnected.
Yeah. Disconnected. Great, great word. But I've been looking for the connection in that. And what I've found to be the case of what Harry was saying is that in every relationship, there's the dominant and the submissive. The contrast of that is variable, but yeah. there's always a dominant aspect of dominant person in the relationship and always a submissive. There's never this kind of head on equal kind of I'm this, I'm that. I just don't find that to be the case. Do you agree with that or no?
No.
No. And why not?
I don't agree with it. I think it is some truth to it, but I think it fluctuates. I don't think it's always the same person. Like, especially as far as like a gay relationship is. Like, I don't think there's always the same person who's the dominant in the situation or the same person who's the submissive. I think those roles switch constantly. In some gay relationship, I mean, there are some gay relationship where it is that, and you can clearly say that this is the, I mean, straight people like to say the man in the relationship, and then this is the, I mean, they're both men, but like, just for argument's sake, you could see which more masculine, was more dominant, whatever.
I don't even mean it in a sense of more masculine. I think this is a dynamic in. I guess when I say that, what you're taking it as in the gender role, in the gender role. But if you think about any relationship that you're in, there's always a dominant and there's always a submissive, whether it's, you know, it's a friend or it's a, there's always that element there. And even though there's it's interchangeable at times in, you know, situationally, but yeah. I think I've always found that there's always a dominant and a submissive, even if that dominant and submissive is slight, or even if
it changes. It doesn't have to be a 90-10% split. It can be, you know, something where they're a little bit closer, like a 60-40 or something. But at some point, somebody in the relationship has to take control. There's going to be situations where somebody has to make the decisions or somebody has to grab hold of what's going on and somebody has to defer to somebody else.
Go ahead.
No, that's fine. I agree. I think I agree with that. I just think it fluctuates more. I mean, I can only speak for gay relationships, but I think it fluctuates. I feel like it fluctuates more when there's two men or when there's two women, because then
there's no standard of it. It's almost like,
expected. Like, for instance, when a man and a woman go on a date, it's expected.
Right.
But it's the norm for the man to pay for the date, open the car door, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
But like in a gay relationship, it's like we're both dudes or we're both women. So it's like, I think it fluctuates more so because there's no like you're supposed to be.
So that's interesting. How does that work? Or how, in your experience anyway, how has that worked for you as far as paying for a date?
My experience is if a dude asks me, he's paying.
Right.
If I ask a dude, I'm paying.
Okay.
Right.
That's how I always
done it. Well, what's interesting about that is I still agree with that. Like, if a girl asks me out, she's paying.
I agree with that too, but a lot of dudes don't. A lot of dudes are like, I always have to pay, and I'm like, okay, whatever.
Well, and that's fine if that's what you think. But the point is, it, just in the dynamic of that. So I guess what I'm saying is, in the dynamics of the practicality of how we perceive gender roles, which I don't even think really, you can't even really apply that anymore. And so this was a dilemma for me
initially because we had been doing, you know, we had did the radio show in 2006, but we started the podcast when, Harry, 2010, 2012, 11, maybe, I think the end of 11 or something. But something in any like event, that, yeah. In any event, what happened is we had all of these philosophies and thing. And then when gender became more fluid, I was trying to figure out if these things still work, and I found them to still work. The difference is not necessarily so, you know, like traditionally guys would go, OK, the woman washes the dishes and the guy. All of that kind of shit went out the window because people kind of fit in where they fit in. But I think overall, the understanding of who is the dominant person always exists in any relationship, in husbands and wives, fathers and mothers, sisters and brothers, friends and family, and all that. You always have that element. And I find that when you apply what we would consider these, change these principles from gender to male, female, or we change it to dominant and feminine, it still falls true because of what happens is there's always, we all have a different level of insecurity, and we have a different level of insecurity in a lot of different things. And so, for instance, I have a friend of mine, he's married to his wife. He hates to paint. He's not patient. And so she does all the taping. Like whenever they tape paint something, she does the taping, he does the painting, because yeah, he just doesn't have. But I mean, I think we fit into these modes based on what we're good at, but ultimately there is a dominant and a feminine aspect of it, one that kind of carries a little more weight than the other. And I think depending on who the person is, I think that exists. Would you agree with that or no?
No, I agree with that.
Okay. All right. So I what's interesting even about that is that my own kind of like I had to back up and look at this perspectively because this was a whole world that I didn't really understand. And I had gay male and gay female friends and trans people who would still ask me for help. And I wanted to be able to help them to understand, you know, to be able to take those chess techniques and apply them to these, you know, relationships, the LGBT relationships as well. I had to kind of decipher it and kind of see where things meet up. And yeah, so I think when you do that, you see that they all come true. And so you find that I find also the level of validation has a lot to do with who's dominant. The person that's more confident, the person that more is more comfortable with who they are. And there's always a difference in that. Never are you going to have a relationship where both people feel validated in the same way. And I agree, into certain situations that change, especially as a comic, you deal with rejection. And, you know, I mean, like it's, I always say being a comic is the insanity of being a comic is that you put yourself open for judgment every time you get on stage. Every time they go, give it up for Akeem, you get on stage and now they're judging you. And from joke to, I mean, if we really think about the insanity of that, to pick a profession that you're being judged every moment of your pursuing your art in every situation, is really kind of, we're out of our minds that, you know, they even put you, you know, to put that, to put yourself in a situation where you consistently have to do that.
Yeah, I agree. Because it's crazy. We're stupid for doing it, but here we are.
Yeah, but here we are. And so, but you find the relationships in that, like that dominant and that submissive, and is always a situation like you find the games and stuff and the things that happen and where people find their insecurity. Like I remember, we had a good, I wouldn't say he's a good friend, Harry. You know who I'm talking about, Wayne.
Oh boy. Yeah.
But he was an older guy, dated a younger dude, and all of a sudden, this younger dude started to date. He was stepping out on him with an older guy, with another guy. And the principles of understanding what the boundaries were, him just understanding what the boundaries are, and you know, I always say relationships are really simple. Just if you understand what your non-negotiables are and then never negotiate them.
Yeah.
The problem being how people are never really honest about what those non-negotiables are. you know?
I think, and I might be biased, but I think gay relationships, people, gay dudes in general, I can only speak from my experience.
Yeah, yeah.
They're more open about what they want. Cause there's a lot of gay relationships that are open. Like there's a lot of gay men that are in open relationships. I know 20. Cause this is like, they're open about like, listen, I want to be with you forever, blah, 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 blah.
But
sometimes I want to fuck Rick.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, well you can fuck Rick, but just tell me when you're going to go fuck Rick. And it's like, I feel like that's a thing that's very common in gay men relationships. I don't know if that's as common with a straight
relationship. Not at all. I mean, they just go out and cheat on each other. But yeah. But it's as common as it is with in gay relationships. It's just that people are dishonest about it. Yeah. So here's an interesting question. What makes that not okay? Like in terms of like, what's the boundary of what's not okay?
I guess you got to figure. I mean, when people who have open relationships, they have to figure that out. So they probably, I mean, I know some people who are open relationships, like, okay, we can hook up, but I have to be there. Like if we hook up, you have to be, both of us have to be with the fucking this dude or whatever the case may be.
Right, right, right.
Or some of them say, okay, you can hook up, but you guys can't kiss, so you can't spend the night. Or you like I've heard a slew of different things.
Right, right. It's all very arbitrary, and it kind of, it's the same thing. Like I've said that about, you know, when guys they're with their girl and they do a threesome, and there's always this, well, you can't kiss her, or you can't this. And so what happens? So is it, I guess what I'm asking, is it the intimacy? In the relationship, that's the no-no, or is it? So the physical is kind of, well, we fucking, it's fine as long as we're fucking, and it's open game. But even what you're saying is that's not even that is kind of very specific in terms of.
I think what it is as far as relationship goes, I think if this is how it's been explained to me.
Yeah.
You want to be, if as far as gay relationship, you want to be number one. So you. There's certain things that you want to be able to do with your dude that other gay motherfuckers can't do.
Right.
So you establish whatever the fuck that is. So if your dude is like, okay, only I get to fuck you, but you can fuck everyone else, but no one else to fuck you except for me.
Right.
That's
right.
An example. Or whatever they decide on.
Or it could be as simple as like, don't be going to movies and cuddling up with
exactly. Him. Yeah. Don't take this motherfucker on dates. Don't cuddle with him, whatever. You want to go fuck this dude, you go fuck him, and then you leave and come back here. And it works for a lot of people, because I know a lot of gay men who are in open relationships, and they're very happy with whatever. I mean, they seem happy. I mean,
who knows?
Exactly. But I think it's just more open, but I think it's just because I think men understand more that sex...
Be attacked. Right. Well, part of it is also that we got the wolf and we want to fuck. And so it's like, how can I do this? How can I do this and still get my dick wet? And so what's interesting about that is I almost don't think it's as mature as it is. It's just that like you in a sense, you're saying, look, this is what I want to do. And what makes me feel comfortable about doing this in the context that I don't feel insecure? And then it could be something as simple as, you went to the movies with this motherfucker? Like, what the y'all, and y'all shared popcorn? What the? What's interesting about that, that's no different than women. Like, you know, in a heterosexual relationship, you'll have women who'll be like, oh, you fucked her, but then you hung out, you went on vacation with this bitch. It's as much as we see these things as different, even in my own thinking, and somebody who grew up Brooklyn in the 90s and listening to hip hop and stuff and all that the level of that homophobia that was going on, I'm able to see how much it doesn't matter that those principles are still in place. It's, oh, you cheated on me, but you love that bitch? Like, you told that bitch you love you? You know what I'm saying? It becomes these kind of sidebars, almost like these parameters that you've crossed, but that are very arbitrary, and they mean, like, I've, you know, plenty of times I've done threesomes where don't kiss that bitch. I don't want you kissing that bitch.
You know,
And it's like, I can eat a pussy and I can get my dick sucked, yeah. But I can't. Like, it's so arbitrary.
Yeah. I mean, and kissing is intimate. And I mean, as I guess sucking dick isn't. But like, I've hooked up with dudes. I've hooked up with dudes and we've done a bunch of gay shit. And like, oh, I don't kiss. I'm like, oh, that's fine with me. But then I get it. I'm like, oh, OK, because for some reason, kissing is gayer than sucking dick.
Yeah, right. But it's so arbitrary. I remember I was dating this years ago in the fucking late 90s. I was dating this call girl, right? This call girl. And she had these clients, the rich clients that was fucking her. And then she got to the point and she was like, listen, I only want you to fuck me anally. And I was like, she goes, yeah, well, I mean, my pussy is business, but my ass is personal. And you know, I like, I was in my 20s, my late 20s, and I was like, whatever, you know, like but this kind of arbitrary idea of the fact that we take this arbitrary and we put value on this based on whatever the fuck is going on in our head. And somehow this becomes a standard where it's really just, you have given this particular act or this particular thing an arbitrary value based on who you are, based on how you were raised and all these other things that come into play. And so somehow kissing is not, but this is, which is just
It's weird.
Yeah, it's absurd. It's almost.
Dante, I think you're muted.
I think he might have pushed the mute button.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah, we can hear you now. You're back.
Yes. So the you know, this kind of arbitrary level of things and the fact and I'm really trying to it's so interesting because I've always wanted to figure this out on the heterosexual level, and now that because gender being fluid in that way, I want to understand it the same way. And so we've had had a bunch of, like, we had a good friend, a good comic, I'll tell you who it is afterwards, but was dating this girl, and literally she's a lesbian, but she basically was in the friend zone. Like this chick was hanging out with her and this and that and the other, but there was nothing really sexual.
She got friend zoned.
She got friend zoned
and found herself in the friend zone and couldn't get out of it.
Yeah. And it was like, and this girl was like, she was really into this girl, and I was saying to her, you know, going back to the idea of these non-negotiables, is I said, do you like this girl? She goes, yeah, I really want to have a relationship with her. And then she was like, well, I was like, but do you is the friendship worth not having the relationship? So I think you can be in a situation where you like somebody in such a way that being in the friendship is more painful than not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I said, you have to decide what is non-negotiable, that you're in a situation where you go, yes, I enjoy your friendship, but your friendship is a no-go if we are not intimately involved or in some kind of relationship in some sense, some way. And I think you decide whether or not that's okay or not. And it's okay that you, so usually what you'll have is the other party will go, so you don't want to be my friend if I'm not fucking you. And you could go,
And honestly, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I've had situations like that when I was hanging with a dude. I'm like, I don't need more friends. I have a lot of friends.
Right.
I'm not in a low. I need, like, so it's not selfish. It's like, it's annoying to be around someone that you, because then you start liking them more and more and more, and then it's like you're still in the friend zone. So that's more detrimental. So it's like, nah, I'd rather just not talk to you.
Yeah.
And then, so it's not even selfish. It's just honest.
Well, I mean, I think it is. I think it is selfish, but I think it's a selfishness that you need to exercise when. Yeah. If this is, you know, one of the things that we say on the show is that you always got to put your happiness first, because if you don't, nobody else will.
Is it technically selfish, you think? Is it technically?
I don't think it is, because if you, then you're just going to be pining over a motherfucker that you can't have.
Right. I don't necessarily
that's detrimental to your mental health, and it's detrimental to you as a person. So it does, I mean, in a sense, I don't think it's selfish. I think it's more selfish to sit there and try to be friends with this motherfucker
Right.
Knowing that the whole time you're thinking about you want more.
I think that's dishonest. That's dishonest because you want more and you're acting like you don't want more. But I think it is selfish. I don't think it's bad to be selfish. I don't think it's bad for you to think that your happiness is important to you.
I don't know. I just don't know if it's selfish. Maybe it's just putting your preferences.
What is selfishness? What is selfishness? I mean, what are we defining selfishness as?
What is the definition of selfishness? Selfishness definition.
And I understand that it has a negative connotation. I'm just saying that negative connotation comes from this idea of the fact that you should be generous to a fault where you actually give of yourself in a way that. But go ahead, read the definition.
Concerned excessively or exclusively with oneself, seeking or concentrating on one's own advantage, pleasure, or well-being without regard for others. See, that's the part. I don't think that it's without regard for others.
Is that the only definition? Because I don't think
two, arising from concern with one's own welfare or advantage in disregard of others.
Oh, so it is in disregard.
Yeah,
so
see, I think it means. I think selfishness implies you have to disregard. And I don't think it's selfish. I think it's focusing on yourself and how it affects you. It's not that you want to hurt the other person. In fact, it's the opposite. You would like. To make the other person happy, but unfortunately in the circumstances you can't.
I mean
either way it is standing up for yourself and setting your own boundaries. I don't think it's selfish for my end, but I guess if you mean
selfish in terms of, well, the definition, I can't go against the definition. The definition says it in excess of it, but I really don't have a problem with deciding what makes me happy and doing what makes me happy and not doing what you make. Like, I'm not going to live my life for somebody else or for somebody else's happiness.
But I always found it so bizarre when somebody would be like, well, let's just be friends. And I just remember thinking, you don't want to be friends. You're a liar. We're not going to be friends after this. It's never happened where we're friends. We don't send each other. We're not going to send each other texts and hang out after this.
Yeah, anyone who says that, it's cool for just friends. It's full of shit.
You're full of shit.
Because anyone who's friends with someone, they always have that motive. You the only reason why you're friends with them is so you can eventually they slip up and then now you're not friends anymore.
Right.
Now
so you're laying in the bushes waiting for them to slip up so you can get. So it's disingenuous. You have this desire and you're hiding.
I just like the idea of waiting for somebody to slip in the pussy. Like right now that they're down, I got you. Now's my time to shine.
Well, you know, the thing with that, even if you get that situation, which very rarely, I mean, look, let's be honest, but you know, it's very rarely that somebody gets a pity fuck. And if you do get a pity fuck, you don't get a reprieve. You don't get a repeat on the pity fuck. You can take that one with you and keep it moving because it ain't going to happen again. I mean,
unless you knock it out of the park and then she's like, or he was like, oh, okay, well, maybe this can be something.
And even then, you might rock for a little while. But the reason why you don't like this person in the first place is the dynamic of that. You just don't like them that much. You don't see them in that way. I mean, I think that men in general, and I think even men with men, there's this kind of unwritten understanding that sex, like you said, the sex is very separate in terms of love and sex. It's two different things because, you understand that in general. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. I was about to say, I think some people just have a hard time realizing that those people have types. Men, women, they have types. Yeah. And it's like people try so hard to I can win this guy over. I can win this girl over. I'm like, if you're not their type, there's nothing you can do to become their type. I'm sorry. You can take the personality you want, but if you're 5'7" and her type is tall motherfuckers,
you
don't be tall. So if that's her type, then
I guess, but I don't know that I've ever been anyone's exact.
Yeah,
type.
I'm never nobody's type either. Do you know what I mean?
I mean some people's type does fluctuate and you can talk your way into it. But a lot of people, sometimes people have a type that's like set in stone, especially, I mean, maybe it might be gay men because gay men are shallow as fuck.
Yeah, yeah. So,
like, they are, myself included. Like, there's some people like those, like, I won't compromise for certain things. I'm like, I'm just not going to have to, I'm not into that type of
thing. Now, is that because, I mean, it's, I'm fascinated by gay guys versus lesbians because it's a completely different dynamic. And it's because it's guys, you know, it's guys going,
it's a guy. Yeah.
It's guy. It's another, even if it's a gay guy, it's a guy going, I want to fuck. I want to fuck. Let's fuck.
Yeah.
And then you have, now you have that world with the options that women, that straight women have, but it's the gay culture where it's like guys wanting to fuck. So you have those options where you could be picky. You can be like, I'm not fucking anybody who's
under
16.
Honestly, it gets to the point where like you can fuck as much or as little as you want.
Right.
You can literally turn on Grindr and there's gay dudes within feet of you.
It's like
you
those,
find
it's
whichever
like those
one
Brazilian
you want.
Steak houses where you could just leave the paddle on green.
Yeah.
And just fuck
especially,
as much as you want.
Yeah,
and then
especially
like,
if you're in a metropolis, like if you're in a fucking city, New York, Chicago, Boston, Atlanta, San Francisco, if you're in a big city, you
like
can
James Brown and living in America.
Yeah, you can have sex with a different guy every day for months.
Yeah,
right.
Like if that's your prerogative, so it's like you can be picky. You can't have a type because statistically you're going to be someone else's type too. So it's like it's just a number game, really.
And that's what straight women get to experience all the time is having the type of a height. Like I don't know guys that many guys at all that have a height thing
with women. Like a heterosexual man that has a height thing.
I don't think that's a thing for men.
Dude, we can't afford that. We can't afford to be like, she's 5'9". I gotta get rid of her.
She's not at least 5'9". I'm not fucking with her. But I think that's all that has to do with the options. So it's a really interesting concept that the options alone in gay relationships create a whole nother dynamic. Of because those are options, which is interesting because, you know, like the authenticity of a man in a heterosexual relationship is honestly the thing that makes him most attractive. So and I'm not saying that you got a guy who's, even if a woman like, yo, I want to do with a six pack and a this and a that. I mean, when you're an authentic dude who
Jesus Christ, I'm so glad that doesn't appeal to that, that I can get past that because I wouldn't be in the fucking running.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was that. Yeah, you know, if it was about having six pack abs and being in great shape, I'd still be.
I think that's the difference. I used to have a joke about this, but I think that's the big difference between men and women is men. I think men tend to be, I think women are less shallow in the fact that you can win them over with a personality. Yeah. Women.
Yeah.
Like it happens all the time. You'll see a badass chick with a mediocre dude. And it's like, and he might not even
have
money.
Why you gotta talk about Jermaine Dupri like that, man?
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying like fucking Jay-Z and fucking Beyonce. Beyonce is a bad bitch. Jay-Z looks like he got stung by a bunch of bees. Like,
You couldn't even say one bee. A bunch of bees. A whole hive.
No one thinks Jay-Z's hot. Now, he has swag. He's a dope-ass rapper. He's the coolest dude on the block, but he's not sexy. But when you say sexy,
do you mean aesthetically he doesn't maintain
from a visual standpoint. Yeah, that's right, man. He's not traditional. He doesn't have abs, he doesn't have the perfect face, he doesn't have like good looks, he's not fucking Denzel.
Yeah. But
he's so smooth and he has such dope swag that he can pull someone like Beyonce because that's just what it is. But like
now, let me ask you this. If Jay was gay, do you think his swag would be able to pull other men?
I think it's a good question, right? That is a good question. I think his money would.
But you don't think that? Okay, so I'll tell you something that this is an interesting thing.
I don't think his swag would help him as much if he was gay.
I don't think as much because I think that you're right. I think men are more shallow. But I'll tell you this. I used to go. Patrice used to throw a barbecue, right?
Yeah.
And so, I was a male stripper for like 10 years, right? And that was kind of my job before I started doing comedy, right? 60 pounds ago in 20 years, but that's a whole nother thing.
Yeah.
I always say when people always ask when 60. All right, motherfucker, watch your mouth. He goes, yeah, motherfucker, 60. Absolutely. 60 would take me around 240, you piece of shit. I could hold a six pack at 240.
No matter what you said, I was just going to repeat it.
But so we used to, Patrice used to have this barbecue.
Yeah.
And he had this gay friend of, it was actually Von DiCarlo's, a friend of Von DiCarlo, he used to come over. So I walk in and he goes, you know, Patrice was just loud and obnoxious. He was like, hey, he tells the dude, oh, what you like? What you, well, see what we brought for you? Got you a big light skinned nigga, blah, 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 blah. And he goes, and the guy goes, no, that's not even my type. Like he kind of, you know, so
he was playing along with it, you're saying?
No, he was absolutely serious that I was not his type. He had no, he was like, I don't know, that's not even my thing, right?
Thanks, but no thanks.
And I felt a kind of way about it. You know what I mean? I was like,
I mean, everyone gets in that. Yeah, I get that. Like, right. If you want to be attractive to everyone, even if you're not even on the team, you still want to be like, well,
I'm not going to lie. There's been a couple times I walk through the village and I get hit on occasionally. I'm like, thanks, but no thanks. But it does put a pep in my step. I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
So, feels nice. So this dude was like, no, that's definitely not my thing. And then, so, you know, we would barbecue from early and we could night late. And so later on in the night, you know, people started leaving, but it was still a good crowd of people. And me and this dude ended up in a conversation. And we were talking and blah, blah. And so, like, I felt kind of a way because I didn't forget that he said that I wasn't his type. So I was grinding this dude. I was like, yo, blah, 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 blah. I wasn't out and out hitting on him, but I was showing my wares, my swag, my this, da, 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 da. He would tell me about this. We were sharing, da, 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 da.
Nobody wants to be turned down, even if it's a party you have no intention of attending. You still want to be invited.
So at the end of the night, he said, you know, we should exchange numbers and go. And I'm like, nah, I'm not your type. Beat it. Right. So I flipped him. And then I was like, nah, you're going to. But so it was an interesting thing for me, because even that I was like, this, if you got this game, if you have this confidence, I think it even works. I mean, for me, it even worked with a guy who was like, you're not my type at all. You know, not at all. Yeah. I don't even think of it. Because I think even though, you know, gay men may be a little more shallow,
I think here's the main difference that I want to rebuke that. I you're saying that you were able to wear him down and eventually he was like, oh, let me get your number.
Yeah.
That's because you guys were at a setting, like a barbecue where everyone's hanging out, talking, whatever.
Sure.
I don't think you would, like, for instance, to be able to have such a long conversation with that dude, you have to be at a setting like this. But I don't think a gay dude's going to go on a date or have that long of a conversation with someone who they're not necessarily attracted to. I think women do that all the time. Women will be like, okay, he's not my type, but maybe he'll take me out to dinner. And then you take her out to dinner and then you talk to her, and all the smooth shit. And then she's like, oh shit, I fuck with this dude. And then now you're fucking
a gay guy. Won't even give you that next step, that possibility.
I don't think they'll give you that.
Uh-huh. Okay. Look, first of all, I came a little disrespectful. The conversation wasn't that long. I'm just saying, it didn't take me that long to flip him. In fact, maybe six, 7 minutes. Boom, 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 boom. But let's be honest. I know me, and I know what my strengths are, and I know how to communicate in the subtext of what's going on. And I knew, and even deep down, I knew that I was working. I was working this motherfucker just to make sure I'm not your type. Let's see. So, but what I mean is, I what's interesting about that, I think if we talk about on a real surface level, yeah, it's all surface. But if you really have that, like when you talk about Jay looking at that dude, is like, if you watch this dude's interviews, if you watch his philosophy and stuff, he's a bad motherfucker. Like, he
I'm not debating that at all. I couldn't agree more. I 100% agree.
And I don't know if I mean, as much as men are like, I've smashed chicks who I didn't find attractive just because they were so dope. Like, they were just so sweet and, you know what I mean? Like, just.
I feel you, but you don't see that relationship. Like, it's rare that you'll see some ugly chick who's wifed up by this fine ass dude.
Oh,
like,
that's not true.
I can't think of it.
It's not an ugly ass chick. Wait. You said an ugly ass chick who's not fined up with a fine dude?
Ugly chick wifed up. Like, for instance, if.
What about Derek Jackson?
She's not that ugly.
Dog, she's ugly. Homely as shit, she's dog. Plain. She's home. That Derek Jackson is if on paper, six pack. You know who I'm talking about, Akeem?
I don't. I'm gonna look him up now.
He was on Black Twitter where he was talking on you gotta love your queen and this.
He spells his name a fucking goofy ass way too. I forget what it was. Jackson. Now I gotta
look. Oh, is this this dude that has like a million followers or whatever?
Yeah, he had a million followers, and then he got caught out there because he was cheating. Like he was telling black women, oh, you know my queen, you gotta treat your women, you gotta be your queen and all this stuff, and come to find out he was
perfect example, nigga. He was cheating. So he was white. Up with the big bitch, but he's got
a good point.
I'm not saying he's big. I'm just assuming. I know.
Yeah. You know, I don't see. What do you mean? You saying what, Harry? That
Akeem's right. He wasn't even faithful to that one. He was fucking around.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't think it's as common. Like, it's very common that you'll see a busted looking dude with a bad bitch.
Yeah.
And it's not even on some money shit. It's just like he had that swag and that personality.
Yeah, he got the swag. Right.
Well, like,
yeah,
I remember they did
it's rare you'll see the inverse.
They did a poll years ago, like, and who women thought was like the sexiest man on TV. And it was James Gandolfini from The Sopranos that they voted the sexiest dude because
it's the gabagoo.
They found that his like power and his intensity.
Yeah.
So that's I think that's an advantage that you're able to get women by your personality. Like, I can't tell you the amount of women that before I came, I've been gay forever, but I came out like 5 years ago. When I was
now, did you date women before that or no?
No, never.
Are you gold star?
Yeah. I've never slept with a woman.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
Extremely gay. And,
that's what it like, says on his medical records too. It's
crazy. Couldn't be
like he was born. I used to do that joke. He was born and he was like, get off me! Somebody wipe me down.
It's just like, but like I would do shows because like women like sense of humor, like funny people. Yeah. Like I would do shows and women would hit on me after shows all the time. And I mean, like, very attractive women that shouldn't be hitting on me.
Right.
And I would be like, oh, no, I'm busy, blah, blah, which basically means, motherfucker, I'm gay. I'm going to go watch Gopher in my hotel room. But I wasn't out at the time, so I just had to be like, oh, no, I'm tired or whatever excuse I'd make up so I don't have to hang out with these women. But, like, people hit like, all the time.
Really?
So I can't imagine. So, like, that. And so comics, like, if you're funny and if you go on stage and you do well and you're not having sex afterwards, that's your fault. Like, you're actually not talking to it.
Yeah. Well,
it's like they throw it at you.
Yeah. I would say this, though. The simple fact that you were gay and you weren't interested also entices the fact makes these women more aggressive because
that's true.
They're so accustomed to you know somebody niggas being thirsty you motherfuckers talk to you he's like it's funny I talk about this all the time it's like a guy will talk to a woman even his body language like he'll the way he squares his shoulders up in front like so you know, Harry and I used to talk this all the time. I would always be able to bag some chick up on the he watched me do it too.
Many times
at a bar and
watch you doing it sitting on top of a mailbox. I remember that specifically.
and I would talk over my shoulder. So the bad chick and I would be like, so you da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And she would go, and then after I finished saying what I'm saying, I would look forward.
But you also genuinely like you don't immediately your world doesn't light up when a hot chick walks in the room. You enjoy it, you notice it, but some guys, like when there's a chick in the vicinity of the area, everything shuts down. Like I've watched it happen in green rooms and things where everybody, the whole power shuts down and everyone's focused on this girl. I'm like, what are you guys doing? But then again, I would have done the same shit 7 years ago because I didn't know any better.
Yeah.
You know, that's the
what
difference.
You was going to say, Kim, you were going to say you've seen that as well.
No,
like-
I've seen that happen before. Like, that's why sometimes women, like, I, like, sometimes women will talk, will kind of heckle during my, like, during my show at some point, but it'll just be like, I understand. I'm like, oh, you're not used to not getting an attention. Because, like, I have, when I'm on stage, I have a joke where I hit on a dude in the audience and I do all this back and forth thing. But it's like, sometimes the woman will get in the feelings like, well, why am I not getting attention? And it's like, right. That didn't work on me. I couldn't be more not interested in you. Like,
right.
So the tricks you do on straight men, it's like, that does nothing for me. Like, there's nothing that you have that I want. So whatever you're going to do, whatever you pouting or you being upset, whatever, that's not going to affect me.
Well, all your secret powers that I am immune to your kryptonite, which is interesting because I tell this to dudes all the time. It's like guys who are trying to meet girls. If you're a straight dude and you treat a woman like as if a gay man is hitting on you.
Yeah.
What you said, they're even more aggressive. When you go, I'm good. It becomes
now
so
interesting.
Right. I talk about this whole thing about the subtext of this. The subtext is that you're not worthy.
Yeah.
You're going, what you have, all of this, with your eyelashes and this and your booty and all that. It's not good enough.
It's also human nature. It's not just women to a degree.
And that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
It's human nature. I mean, it's a sale. Sometimes they use it as a sales technique. You go 100 limited, 100 items, first 50. And then it creates some type of value where you go, they're not just giving this away. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're not just giving it away, it must be really good. It must be really important.
Yeah, we were talking to Vinnie Brand about this, how in the early 90s you would go into comedy clubs and they would have a fishbowl full of condoms, right? And you could just get a handful of condoms, and because you could get condoms so free, we used to throw them at each other and blow them up, and just because they were free, we just didn't have, you know, they just didn't have that value. So it's interesting to me the conceptually that you're, you know, if I'm approached by a woman, I'm assessing her and what her value is. I'm trying to see if she's good enough. Where most of the time, most women are going, every guy I've ever met tells me I'm good enough.
Yeah. Every guy wants to fuck me and treats me and puts me on a pedestal because they all want to fuck me. Because he doesn't want to fuck the guy who's figured out that you should just do the opposite.
Yeah. I don't remember this mailbox thing though.
Leaning. It was the Romanian chick. You might have been leaning on it, maybe not sitting on top of it. I remember sitting on it.
I was
maybe you were. You know what? Yeah, all right. You were sitting on it, and it was I think you had just done this comedy lecture or something that somebody asked you to do comedians, these like young open micers that you did, and then you were back.
I think this was at the Lantern. Yes.
Yeah, it was outside the Lantern.
Okay, I remember. Never mind. But just talking over your shoulder, the subtext of that body language is my life is forward. You are just peripheral.
Exactly.
I got enough to just say a little something and then I'm back. This is what's most important to me. And whereas you'll see young dudes, but when they find an attractive woman, they're like, they lean over, the woman doesn't talk loud enough. They lean. What'd you say?
Yeah. They're waiting on her every word.
Whereas I would go like, look, could you speak up? I don't know what you're saying. You got to speak up.
Yeah.
Like I'm not even in your positioning, even in your body language. I'm not willing to give you even the body language of thinking you're that. Now, don't get me wrong. I it's not a technique though. It's kind of comes from a confidence that I know that my intention is always to bring value to people's lives, friends, family, women, men, you know, other comics. I'm always trying to do that anyway. And
yeah,
being that way, I know that that's what I bring to the table in terms of the offer. And so you got to be worthy of it, because I know what I'm, and the confidence of that, which is kind of that Jay-Z swag. Like, yeah, he knows he's a bad motherfucker.
Yeah, 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 exactly. And I'm sure he was always like that. Like, before he was Jay-Z, he was probably still had the same mentality, yeah, which is why he got as successful as he is.
Yeah, I just watched this video. I just watched this thing off of Drink Champs where Cameron was talking about the first time he recorded with Jay-Z. They put him in the booth. He sat in the booth for 6 months. For 6 minutes.
Yeah.
Just let me hear the beat, listen to the beat, and then he spit a record. Just from beginning and hooks and everything, just bang, 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 bang. Like you said, he was. Yeah. I never seen a guy do that. And we're gonna go behind the scenes. Can you hang out for a little bit? We're gonna do some listener mail and some stuff. What do you got going on? Anything that you want to plug? And your social media?
When is this dropping?
2 weeks from now. 2 weeks.
Everything at Akeem
Woods. Next week, actually. Next Tuesday. Sorry.
Okay, everything at AkeemWoods.com, Instagram, Akeem Woods. We're doing Ontario Improv with Godfrey, August. I don't even know the dates, but just it's on. We're doing Ontario Improv and Cobb's in San Francisco. Oh. All the information's on AkeemWoods.com. That has my Instagram, Facebook, and tour dates.
Dope. Harry, talk to me.
Go to all my stuff at Harry Turjanian. At Harry Turjanian is my social media. And then just check us out on YouTube, the Man School 202 page on YouTube.
Again, let me just shout out Andre D. Thompson, all his social media. We don't forget him. He just couldn't make it today. But follow him when you get a chance to check out his podcast.
Slash Theory.
Yeah, everything on me is Dante Nero. If you want one-on-one consultations, you can hit me at DanteNero.com and book some time with me. Just click on consult. GYBB, get your balls back. WWDD, what would Dante do? The sexual revolution is being podcasted. I love y'all, man. Thanks for listening. Please follow us on Patreon. If you support us, then we can keep doing this. And thank you for letting us be creative. We are out. Man School 202 is created by Dante Nero, hosted by Dante Nero, with Harry Turjanian and Andre D. Thompson, produced by Harry Turjanian, executive producers Matt Kleinschmidt, Harry Turjanian, and Dante Nero.